people. Welcome to our annual flower festival. This flower festival at Sri Radha Gopinath Temple has been an annual event, I believe, for over 30 years since we opened the temple. And at the beginning, it was just a few local people. And then after a while, it became more local people. And after some time, it became many local people. And then it became local people plus some other people. And now it is what it is. I'm so grateful. The idea of this, it's a celebration of a universal, sacred, spiritual principle. Sri Chaitanya, he presented it in a very simple but concise way. Prema Pumartha Mahan. I am seeing so many wonderful people. This means that the highest aspiration we could have in life, the ultimate goal that we can achieve in life, is prema. Prema is spiritual love. Love that is the source of all other love. We read about love in books. We see it in movies. We hear about it in music. Sometimes we aspire for it. Sometimes we cry. We weep. Our hearts are broken because of it. But everyone is ultimately searching for love. Anandamayo Vyashat, the Brahma Sutra tells. That the universal principle of life is the search for pleasure. Everyone searches for pleasure. If you go to some neighborhoods of Mumbai at midnight, you'll see rats crawling around. Why do you think they're crawling around? They're looking for pleasure. And even New York, they're crawling around there too. And cockroaches. And snakes are slithering around. And dogs and cats are jumping and running around. And horses are galloping around, and birds are flying around, and human beings are jumping and crawling and flying, and fish are swimming around. And we try to do like that too. But everyone is looking for pleasure, something we all have in common. And one of the predominating features of life in this world, in all species, is fear. Why there's so much money being spent on military and medical? Because there's fear. And it's a real fear. That fear essentially is because we're searching for pleasure, we fear anything that will interfere with our quest for pleasure, which is pain, which comes in so many forms. And it's so inevitable. Because Ayur Harati Vai Pung Sang. with every rising and setting of the sun, our physical life is being reduced. And however much knowledge we have, and however much wealth we have, however much influence and power we have, we cannot stop the forward march of time. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi. We have to grow old, we have to get diseased, and it's natural. Physically, we will all die. That sounds really sad. But the happy news is we never die. Nahanyate hanyamane sadide. We are the eternal soul that's giving life to this body. The very spiritual force that's witnessing within this very lifetime, childhood, youth, middle age, old age, we're seeing these changes. So similarly, at the time of what we call death, it's another change, physically. Mentally, things are always changing. One moment we're very happy because somebody says thank you, and next moment we're in total misery because somebody says something else. We have that experience. So this ever-changing world, we're so vulnerable. We're looking for pleasure, we're seeking pleasure. But there's so many obstacles. Therefore, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam, the supreme source of all pleasure. There are many names of God. One is Rama. Rama means the reservoir, the source, and the ultimate destination of the search for pleasure. Descends to this world to teach us a universal message. The real pleasure everyone is seeking is love. And even in this emotional states that we're in, whatever it may be, things could give some sense of satisfaction to the mind and the senses. But things, acquisition of money or fame or power or even physical pleasures like intoxication or sex, they can give some emotional and physical pleasure, but they cannot touch the heart. There's only two things that touch the heart: to be loved and to love. And when we lose the connection with the source of that love, we get really mixed up about the subject of love. The origin of love is the eternal soul's love for the supreme soul. And what is the nature of that love? The Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the example. If you pour water on the root of a tree, that water extends to every part of the tree, the branches and the twigs and the flowers and the leaves. Janmadya Shagataha. The Supreme Being is the root of everything that exists. And when we love that source of everything, who we call God, or Rama, the reservoir of pleasure, or Krishna, which means the supreme object of love who attracts our hearts. When that love is awakened from within us, it's not something that we need to get. It's something that's inherent within our very living force, our very soul, our being. Our nature is unconditional, unmotivated, ecstatic love. And when that is awakened for Krishna, it naturally extends to every living being. Because every living being and all of existence, all of creation is coming from that. Even in this world, there are so many songs about it. Some of us may have experienced when you love someone, whether it's love in the form of anticipation or love in the form of pain, practically everything in our life, we can't forget that object of love. We're always being reminded of it. And that the object of that love, what is it? It's not just the physical things. We may be thinking we're loving the physical thing, but actually, what animates the physical thing is what we really love. When somebody is the object of our love, at the time of death, we don't love their dead body. We love the person who's gone. Who is that? And it could cause us so much pain. Whatever's happening in the world, we can't forget that. Because every soul is a part of that supreme object of love. And when from within our heart there is the awakening of that love, then nothing could change it. We see Krishna everywhere. We see our beloved Lord in whatever form we worship, everywhere and in everything. And we learn to love everyone because we love the living force that's there. Love of God manifests as compassion toward life. But how in this world do we awaken that love and how do we express it? That's what this festival is about. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati tadaham bhaktu bahidam ashnami prayatatmana. If one offers me a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or a little water, I will accept it. What do we have to offer to the Supreme? Everything we have is coming from the Supreme. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. That I'm the source of all material and all spiritual worlds, sarva loka maheshwaram. Everything is the property of God. Does the supreme source of everything need anything from us? Everything is a gift of God. Did we create our bodies? Did we create the flowers or the leaves? We may grow them, but ultimately we need the earth. We need the water. We need the sun and the rain. Everything is a gift. So the science of love is given in many analogies. But when you go to the river Ganges, India said Ganga. How do you offer honor to Ganga? You take water and with a loving, prayerful heart, you offer the water to Ganga. Now, two questions. One is, you're taking the water from Mother Ganges. Where are you getting it from, first of all? You're taking it from her. And second of all, when you give it back, does she need it from you? You're taking from her, and there's limitless quantities of water in the Ganga, and we're offering a handful back. What is the big thing about that? From a logical perspective, it makes absolutely no sense. What are these people doing? Some of them are on the bank of the Ganges every day. There's millions and millions of people, and they're sometimes with tears in their eyes, sometimes with deep prayers, and they're offering water. Mother Ganges, just see how much you owe me. I have given you this water. She doesn't owe us anything. We're taking from her. But when we take from her and we offer back with love, she's conquered by that love. That's the science of bhakti. Humility is a very important part of love in spiritual matters, because with humility we understand how grateful we should be for everything we have. And when we offer it, it's not just see what I am doing. And even when we offer to other people, it's the same thing. We're offering, it's an offering to God. When I was a little boy, I often tell a story, and I'm not going to tell it again, but I'll tell part of it. My mother's birthday, and I went to her backyard, and she had one rose bush, and I ripped a rose off, and I ran into the house, and I said, "Happy birthday, Mother," and gave it to her. And I thought she would be maybe angry with me for stealing a rose from her bush. It's the only rose on her bush. She worked so hard to make that rose grow. And it seemed like all the thorns and the bushes were to keep me away. And she took that rose and she cried and pressed it to her heart and said, "Thank you. If you would have given me diamonds or pearls, it would not be as meaningful to me as this rose that you stole from my bush." Because you did it out of love for me. It's the thought that counts. What gives meaning to anything, what gives value to the heart, is the love in which it's given and the love in which it's received. In the Bible it is said, the first and great commandment is to love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul. And what is the characteristic of that love? You will love your neighbor as yourself. That is the process of achieving that love, and that is the expression of the experience of that love, is to show love for others, to care, to be an instrument of compassion. And love, spiritual love, really humbles us, because we really understand it's not ours. It's just flowing through us. A person who loves God and deeply, ecstatically, compassionately loves other living beings feels, it's just God's love flowing through me to help other people. That's the most beautiful experience. It's the most humbling experience. And it's the most empowering experience. And it's something that is transcendental, beyond any material consideration. Anyone, everyone could do it today if we're sincere. And therefore this verse, if you offer a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or water, anyone could do that. Who can't pluck a leaf from a tree? Who can't find a drop of water? If it's offered with sincere intention, it becomes the source of our very spiritual perfection. That means, in whatever situation, we try. Sincerity means we honestly do the best we can. There's example in Ramayana. Let us take a very wealthy person. There's an example, Ravana. Ravana, he was the king of a magnificent kingdom called Sri Lanka. Practically everything his kingdom was made out of gold and jewels. He had the very, very best of everything, the most powerful military in the planet. He was incredible. But he got it all by exploiting others. And he was selfish, and he was cruel. And ultimately, he enjoyed it for a while, and then it was all taken away. And then we have his brother, Vibhishan. He became the king of the same exact kingdom, with the same exact resources. But he used everything in a spirit of love for Ram and compassion for Ram. Sita's the goddess of fortune. Sita's the... She was born of Mother Earth. So all the resources of Mother Earth are Sita. They're Sita's energy. Ravana stole Sita and wanted to exploit Sita for his own selfish greed and desires. That's how he ruled the kingdom. That's how he spent whatever he had. And then there was Vibhishan, who was his brother, who kind of looked like him. Came from the same parent, lived in the same kingdom. But his goal was to bring Sita back to Ram. And when Ram made Vibhishan the king of that kingdom, it became like the kingdom of God. Everyone was happy. Ravana was thinking, everyone is my subject and everyone must do what I want them to do. Otherwise, they will have to face consequence. And Vibhishan ruled the same people. But how did he rule? I'm the servant of everyone. These are all God's children, every single one of them. And I'm God's servant. So to be the servant of the Lord means to be the servant of the servant of his children. So I am the servant of everyone. Nobody loved Ravana. They feared him. But everyone loved Vibhishan. Why? Because he loved them. When we give love, we get love. That's natural. It's reciprocation. So here is Vibhishan. He's a multi-billionaire with more power than any of us could ever imagine. But he was a fully enlightened, pure, saintly person who was filled with ecstatic love.
So what this story is saying, Patram Pushpam Palam Doyam, you offer a leaf or flower. What does that mean? That means you offer the best you have. Vibhishan had a lot. He offered it with humility and devotion and compassion. And that was his perfection in life. And that's how he inspired perfection for everyone. But Ravana used that same energy. Selfish, egoistic, envious. So wealth is not a disqualification. The only thing that's a disqualification is a disconnection from our own hearts, a disconnection from God, which creates ahankar, ego, greed, envy. When Ram was searching for Sita, he came to a place called Kishkindha Kshetra, and there was a lake of water called Pampa Sarovar. And when he was there, he was greeted by a very simple lady. She was so simple from a perspective of material acquisition. She had nothing. Her wardrobe was one set of tree bark. Did you ever wear tree bark? Please raise your hand. Oh, very nice. Thank you, thank you. I was hoping someone would do that. Well, anyways, I tried it. Because I like to read about things, and then I like to see what it really is like. And it really itches. It's not at all comfortable. It doesn't move, you know, the way you'd want it to move. It's kind of stiff, and it's really itchy. And not only itchy, but scratchy. And she just wore tree bark. And she never lived in a house. She lived in a cave. And I even went to her cave. In fact, we brought a whole group of our devotees and we went in her cave. And it's pitch dark in that cave. It's a pretty big cave. But you have to crawl to get in because you can't stand up. You can crawl in and sit down, and if you're tall, your head gets all crushed. But I'm small. So I was sitting there, and we were with I was giving a whole lecture about her in this dark cave, and there was no cross ventilation. So it's really hot. And suddenly, in the darkness, we heard this, and we knew that it's the snakes. There's snakes in here. We can't see them, but we know they're here. And they probably know we're here. So we were pretty prayerful. I was talking, and suddenly, we were all getting bitten. So many bites all over our bodies. There were things biting us, little insects. And kind of like now, I just kept talking. And somehow or other, we all crawled out alive. But she lived in that cave for years. Because her guru, Matunga Rishi, told her before he left for the spiritual world with his other followers, he said, you stay here, and someday the Supreme Lord who has incarnated in this world as Sri Ram is going to come. So you should wait for him. So she was there waiting and waiting and waiting. She had no education. She had no money. She had no house. She had practically no clothes. And Ram came. And she wanted to offer something to him. But what does she have to offer? You know, Vibhishan, he could offer so many beautiful things. He was a king. But she was the same as him in spirit. So she went and collected these little fruits because it was the only fruits around. But those fruits, they look the same whether they're ripe or not. They're actually like berries. If they're not ripe, they're horribly bitter. And if they're ripe, they're very sweet. So she couldn't tell the difference between bitter and sweet. Nobody can. So what she did, it's a fruit that monkeys like to eat. What monkeys do, and I've watched them, they put the fruit in their mouth, and if it's a bitter one, they just spit it out, and if it's a sweet one, they just eat it. So she had a bowl of these fruits and she wanted to offer them to Ram because she had nothing else. She gave him a little straw mat to sit on, and she wasn't very highly trained in culture. She was very simple. She just took the fruit and took a bite out of it and tasted it. And if it was sweet, she took it out of her mouth and gave it to Ram. And if it was bitter, she just kept eating it. And she was giving these fruits to Ram after tasting it. And he was so happy. He was enjoying these fruits as much as great kings offering him magnificent feasts. Because Sara Grahi Janardana, the nature of the Lord is he's seeking the essence. And what is that essence? The sincerity of our intention to serve, to love, samsidhir haditoshan, to please. When Krishna was living as a little boy in Gokul, Mahavan, another lady, she was also living in the jungles. She had no education. She used to just collect fruits from the jungle and go to villages and try to sell them for whatever she could get. And she came to Gokul and cried out, "I have fruits. Does anyone want fruits?" And Krishna, little Gopal, he was maybe about 2.5 years old, maybe 3. And he wanted fruit. So he saw his mother, because in those days they didn't have what do they call those machines where you get your money from? ATM? Okay. They didn't have those. They didn't even have currency or coins. They would barter in the villages. You know, they would grow grains and they would trade their grains. So he saw his mother doing that, so he picked up a handful of grains and went running to the fruit vendor. And as he was running, because he was so small and his hand was so tiny and he was thinking so much about these fruits, that the grains fell out of his hand. So he came to the fruit seller and he just had maybe one or two little pieces of wheat grain in the berries. And he said, "Please give me fruits." And he smiled. That smile melted her heart with so much love. She just wanted to make this boy happy. She didn't care anything about money or grains or anything except, let me just make this boy happy. He's making me so happy. So she just said, take as many fruits as you could hold. And she started piling in his hands, and then he put his arms out, and she started piling them in his arms. And he was so small, but she fit a lot of fruit. All the fruit in her basket, little Gopal, somehow or other, fitted in his arms. And he smiled at her and ran away. And she was so happy. Now the next part is the best part. Do you like the story so far? Honey bowl sounds similar to no, so I... Unless you say the huddy part very loud, I don't know what you're actually the next part. She found such joy in making Krishna smile that she wanted to get more fruit to give him more without any expectation for anything in return. So she picked up the basket, she ran back to the forest and started just searching everywhere for more fruits, and she got more and more and more fruits, and she went to put it in the baskets. And when she did, there was a problem. Because she gave Krishna all her fruits, the basket was filled, over brimming, with a pile of the most precious jewels. Shamsundar Prabhu, he can give us an evaluation of what this was worth. There were the rarest diamonds and rubies and emeralds and sapphires and pearls and lapis lazulis and everything. It was worth, what would be, these were pure. Billions and billions of dollars worth of jewels were there piled in her basket. Because she gave to Krishna, Krishna reciprocated. Krishna reciprocates with us in the material level too. But she saw it. She was so much eager to give Krishna more fruits. There was no room in the basket to bring fruits for Krishna. So she just picked up her basket. She didn't even realize when she went to the forest how heavy it was. She was just so eager to serve. She turned the basket up and down, upside down, and threw all the fruits on the ground in the forest and filled the basket with, she threw all the jewels and then filled the basket with fruit and ran back to Krishna and forgot all about where she left those jewels. And she ran back, Gopal, Gopal, I brought more fruit for you. And Gopal came running out of the house again, and she stacked them up in his arms and his hands, and he smiled at her. And that smile, she discovered within her heart a treasure that was millions and billions and trillions of times more valuable than the jewels. The jewel of love. She attained the ultimate perfection of life. Now, she may have gone back and got the jewels and built a house and everything like that, but that doesn't really matter, because we know if she did, she used it all with love and compassion, with dignity, with integrity, with character. And Krishna, he considered those fruits more valuable than anything, because they were offered with love. He wanted to share them with everyone. He ran to his mother and said, all our family, all our friends, all the Brijabasis, let's give them these fruits. These are the sweet fruits of the ecstatic love of my devotee. And Yashoda started, Krishna was giving them to his mother, and his mother was giving them to the family and friends, the Brijabasi people, the villagers. And however many people came, there was that many fruits. And she was wondering, hundreds and hundreds, how many fit in your arms? He was expanding them. The Supreme Lord wants to share the love of his devotees with everyone. The great story of Sudama. Sudama was in great poverty. His wife loved him. And she said, go to Krishna. He's living in Dwarka now. He can give you so much. She couldn't bear to see him suffering because of hunger. He had nothing. And he didn't care. But she cared about him. So he went to Krishna because he cared about his wife. She was thinking of his hunger. He was thinking of her hunger. Such love. He said, I need to bring something with me. But they didn't have anything. They just had a little straw hut. She went and begged and got some chipped rice. If you ever become a beggar in India, you will get chipped rice. Because it's the cheapest thing. I guess you could call not just chipped rice, but cheap rice. It's flat, hard, dry rice. It lasts a long time. So she just got some of that. It's worth nothing. And she tied it in an old piece of cloth because she had no bags and brought it. And he went to Krishna, and Krishna honored him and loved him so much. And then he said, did you bring something for me? And Sudama was thinking, I can't give my beloved Lord this. But Krishna said, I know what you have. And he grabbed it. And Sudama said, no, don't take this. It's not worthy. And Krishna looked at it and, oh, so nice, chipped rice. And he ate a palmful of it and he was crying and it was nectar. Now we eat chipped rice, we're not crying because it's nectar. But Krishna was. And the amazing thing in this story is Sudama didn't even offer it. Krishna stole it from him. That's how eager he is to taste the sweetness of the love of his devotee. And when Sudama went back home, he saw in the place of his straw hut, there was a magnificent palace. And his wife, instead of just wearing other people's used rags, she was wearing beautiful gowns. Now, the beautiful moral and lesson of this story is when they were living in a simple hut and when they were living in a magnificent palace as multimillionaires, they had the exact same consciousness, akinchana gochara. Everything is a gift of God. Everything should be used for the pleasure of God. And what's the greatest pleasure? To use it in compassion for others. So they had the same consciousness. So whether one is rich or whether one is poor, whatever our situation, this earth is the same earth that's always been. We can divide it into so many different countries, and we can divide it into so many states, and we can divide it into so many counties, and we can fight and declare war over it. And when it's all over, it's the same earth. It was there before us. It's going to be there after us. Whose is it? Nothing's ours. It's all God's gifts to recognize that, to share that, to live with that consciousness is called bhakti. To honor and respect the environment, not pollute it, because it's God's property. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. To see every living being as our brothers and sisters, because that's the truth, that's the reality, that's the spiritual essence that is what invokes actual love. So I think I went over time, but I guess I should come back to this flower festival. That's what this flower festival is about. It's about love. It's about putting a focus on connecting with love and sharing love. So this morning, many of you who are here were plucking flower petals. And for some who came later, we brought more flower petals. So the flowers came, and there were so many varieties of flowers. I'm not good with the Latin names or the Hindi names, not even the English names, but dozens and dozens of varieties with different colors and different shapes and different textures and different fragrances. And I was watching around. There was maybe about 50 baskets around the different rooms of the temple. And around each basket, there was probably 20, 30 people plucking. Anybody could pluck petals off a flower. I saw simple children, tiny little children, just going, and I saw their great-grandparents. And I saw people from the East and the West. I saw people of different races, people of different religious backgrounds, people of different educational qualifications. Everything that people are fighting about was in this room. People fight over sex. People fight over race. People fight over the color of their skin. People fight over what religious background. People fight over what nation they come from. People fight over their caste, their social status. Sometimes we're arrogant. I'm better than you. And sometimes we're feeling depressed. And sometimes we're retaliating. Forget your arrogance, I'm going to overcome you. And everything is going on like this. We're building massive nuclear weapons because of our apparent differences. And all these differences were in the room this morning. And everyone is just smiling. Meanwhile, Vyaski Prabhu is singing, and Gaurvani is singing, and everyone's singing. There was unity. Something everyone could do. And nobody could really be egoistic about how they're plucking flowers. You know, I can do it more artistically than you. We'll just see how I do. And my flowers are more fragrant than your flowers. That, there's no sense of that. Everyone was just appreciating everyone else. And that was the mood. I didn't see anybody claiming I plucked 10,001 flowers and you only plucked 22. None of that matters. Quantity didn't matter. It was quality. The quality that we're all doing this together for the same purpose, to appreciate one another and to share all of our energies to make a beautiful offering to the Lord. Knowing that that offering is going to bring great pleasure to everyone. So as soon as I finished this long talk, which is shorter than most of my talks, as soon as I finished this, they're going to take all these flowers. I think it's over a ton of flowers, over 2,000 pounds of flowers. And they're going to offer all those flowers to Radharani and Gopinath. And we'll be watching, and it will be beautiful. To the degree we find joy in seeing Krishna enjoying the love of all of us together, to that degree our heart becomes purified and we become filled with happiness, spiritual happiness. And a beautiful thing about this is you will not recognize any of the flowers that you plucked. Because they're all mixed together. We don't keep them in like separate containers. Like this is the Bhakti Center's flowers. And this is Raghunath Prabhu's yoga group's flowers. And this is the people from Mira Road. And they're all together. And it's the combined offering of the sincere intent of all of us. And even if you weren't here this morning to pluck any flowers, doesn't make any difference. Because if you're just seeing the flowers falling on Krishna, and you're just happy seeing that, then you get credit for plucking every flower. And that's true. Because bhakti is not just doing something, it's appreciating what somebody else has done. Sometimes, if somebody does something better than you, if you appreciate what they've done, spiritually, you get more credit than they do. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. But it's not supposed to make sense materially, but spiritually it makes sense. Because it's love that gives satisfaction to the heart. And appreciating other people's well-being, appreciating the service and the blessings that others get is a most incredible, wonderful offering, and anyone could do that. So if you didn't pluck flowers, if you just appreciate the flowers that were plucked, you get credit for every flower petal. And not only that, but if you did pluck flowers, if you appreciate what everyone else has done, you get credit for every flower petal. But if you want credit for every flower petal, you won't get any credit. When you're just happy to see Krishna happy and happy to see devotees happy and happy to see what we've all done together, then we get credit for everything. In other words, every single one of us get credit for every single flower petal. If we want it for ourselves, we get nothing. If we want others to have it, we get it all together. Sankirtan, we're all chanting with one voice. When we see others when we share with others Krishna's blessings, Krishna's service, then we become filled with Krishna's blessings. So if we offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, that means in any situation we're in, with whatever we have or don't have, if we're just sincere to serve with love, that is the perfection of our spiritual lives. That is what will awaken the eternal ananda, the bliss of the love within our heart. And when we experience that bliss of love, we don't want to keep it. We just want to share it. Why? Because we love. That's the need of the world. So today's flower festival is a celebration of that blessing that has been given to us. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. When we chant Krishna's holy name sincerely, with a sincere intent, that in itself is like a shower of spiritual flowers of blessings upon us, the whole world. We thank our beloved Guru Srila Prabhupada for giving us entrance into these most beautiful spiritual truths. Thank you very much.
RG Media YouTube channel. Like, share, subscribe.